So I'm going to speak about Mr. Bacon on field theory. From the world. And now? Thank you. So I'm going to speak about entanglement and its true and after Bacon on field theory. And actually, this talk emerges from reading a paper by Clifton and Carl Wilson on several papers on this question, and there's quite many puzzling issues, and I just wanted to highlight them. And then maybe there is going to be a more speculative part about the possible interpretation of entanglement within this framework. In this sense, it's nothing new. It's an interpretation of entanglement that we can have in other types of quantum mechanics. But since there is a sense in which entanglement is even more entrenched in the quantum field theory domain, if we believe this formalism, then it could be relevant. But this part is going to be a bit more speculative. The less speculative part is going to be about entanglement in algebraic quantum field theory. The motivation is think about quantum entanglement as a fundamental feature in quantum mechanics. Whatever interpretation we prefer for quantum mechanics, still entanglement is a fundamental feature of quantum mechanics. And in quantum information theory, for instance, it's a very good example where we might have technological application of quantum entanglement. So there is something out there about quantum entanglement. We can use it. We can do something. It's not definitely not classical, so it's something interesting, and it's challenging in the sense, of course, this notion of non-locality. We've been speaking about that quite a lot in this workshop, and it raises the question of the coherence with relativity in general, in the special case, and even in the general case. So it seems to raise a legitimate question about what happened to, strictly speaking, to entanglement in the relative, special relativistic domain, in the QFT domain, where QFT is understood as a strict conjunction of quantum mechanics and special relativity, in the sense of Poincaré, strict Poincaré covariance, for instance. And furthermore, there is a further question about the fate and meaning of entanglement within the algebraic approach. Because there's this claim, I'm going to be more precise about that, that the algebraic approach is a kind of local quantum physics, in some precise sense, of course. And then we can ask about the meaning of entanglement there in this formalism. So the outline of my talk is the following. I'll start with a few elements about AQFT, the axioms, but people in general don't like this tag, so it's really an assumption that, and people in the community are ready to change these assumptions. And the link with the standard Hilbert space formalism. And then I will briefly discuss the question, why should we be interested at all in this formalism? Maybe on Wednesday, Tony gave us a good reason to be interested in this formalism, and he gave us a possible application of this formalism, even in the more general setting of the covariant approach to quantum field theory using category theory and functors. Here I'm going to speak only about the more traditional standard algebraic approach. But still, there is a question, as I will discuss, about whether we should be, for foundational issues, for instance, be interested at all in this formalism, especially given the fact that, strictly speaking, there is no concrete model for interacting fields which satisfy all the assumption of AQFT. So it's obvious that, or we can make the official objection that it's just not relevant for doing physics. And then I'm going to speak more specifically about entanglement in this formalism, and I will address the question of the cyclicity of states, the Reiche-Rieder theorem, and then the reason why people were so puzzled And then I will address more specifically the question of in what precise sense can people claim that there is more entanglement in AQFT than in non-relativistic quantum mechanics. This is a question of intrinsically mixed states. And it will be a link with the talk we heard this morning about the interpretation of mixture, for instance. But I'm going to speak about that. And then the more speculative part, how can we understand entanglement in this framework? And I will propose a standout interpretation in the philosophy community in terms of non-separability. And then I will address a more technical, methodological worry that we can have if we take entanglement seriously. Everything is entangled. So how can we do physics? Just very briefly, caution. For the more speculative part, I will take as a working hypothesis some kind of realism. So I'd like to be a realist in some sense, just a hypothesis. I'm not going to give argument for that. It's just a hypothesis. And I'd like to emphasize the fact that I'm not going to address directly the measurement problem. So I would like to be clear that just moving into the relativistic domain does not solve the measurement problem, of course. It's still there, and we have to say something about that at some point. But still, I think we can address the question of entanglement in the sense that it gives rise to different, but of course related set of issues. So just many papers, even technical papers, on this question start with references to Einstein, or in the case of the paper by Clifton and Howerson, they invoke Rudolf Hag and Weitzman also in his book on spin, CPT spin and statistics, I think, where they all claim that somehow if we take the formalism seriously, we have entanglement everywhere, we have open systems, strictly speaking, and it seems to be hard to do physics. And this is from, most of these people refer to Einstein, and this is from his 48 Dialectica paper, where he states quite precisely the principles he wants to be committed to. The important thing is, it appears to be essential for this arrangement of physical things, that at a specific time, the things claim an existence independent of one another, insofar as the things lie in different parts of space. And then, at the end of this quote, without such an assumption, physical thought in the familiar sense to us will not be possible, nor does one see how a physical laws could be formulated and tested without such clear separation. So, he saying there that we have some kind of principle there, and without this principle, we cannot even do physics somehow. And then he continues about field theory. This is not the second paragraph. For the relative independence of spatially distant things, this idea is characteristic. Of course, a non-external influence on A has no immediate effect on B. This is known as the principle of local layer action. Again at the end, he says the complete suspension of this basic principle would make impossible the idea of the existence of quasi-closed systems, and thereby the establishment of empirically testable laws in the sense familiar to us. So again, here he's speaking about another principle, of course, the principle of local action. And again, he refers to the fact that we need this principle in order to do physics. But enough with quotes. We can see at least three principles in this quote, but it's not very important whether we can see it in this quote, but that's really a bit the core of what I call classical metaphysics, or a classical way of thinking about the world. The The first is the localization, in the sense that fundamental physical systems are localized in finite space-time regions. The principle of local action, or maybe you can call it no-singling, the fact that no physical effect can propagate faster than light. And this very important principle, the separability principle, which said that fundamental physical system possess distinct independent states on their own, and the joint state of a compound system is determined by the states of the subsystems. And there is another sometimes underlying principle, which is about the individuality of fundamental objects. And AQFT is local quantum theory in the sense of localization, and of course the local action principle, and that's in this sense that Haag, for instance, calls his theory a local quantum theory. Now, a few lines about the algebraic approach. Not going to go into too many details, but just a few elements. AQFT on Minkowski spacetime consists principally on this map between bounded open spacetime regions of Minkowski spacetime and sister subalgebras of a total sister algebra, such that of course the self-adjoint elements of the algebra represent physical observables. And such that we have, of course, certain physically meaningful conditions that I'm going to discuss. And yeah, it's so algebra is just an algebra which is closed under involution and equipped with a norm. And one don't need to go into the details, but can just think about the algebra of the bounded operators on a Hilbert space. And then these famous assumptions, or axioms, but really they are assumptions because people are ready to modify them, mainly due to three people, Haag, Kasper, and Araki. The first one, isotonic, tells you that if you have a space-time region which is contained in another one, then you have the same for the corresponding algebras. And then the local action principle, this is really the which aims to anchor this notion that we cannot have physical effects traveling faster than light. It's saying that if we have the observables, the elements of algebras, just make space-like separated, just commute. And the other relativistic fundamental notion is the Poincaré covariance of the theory. And then the link with the standard way of thinking in terms of Hilbert spaces is given by this GNS construction. We define a state on a sister algebra as a normalized positive functional on this algebra, and which gives you expectation values for the given observables in the state. And then there is this result which says uniqueness result, which says that if we have a sister algebra and a state on this algebra, then there exists a unique Hilbert space and a representation of the algebra on this Hilbert space in the algebra of the operators on this Hilbert space and a vector such that you have this expectation value. And then we should be a bit in the case you can, of course, you can do this in non-relativistic quantum mechanics and everything is fine and all representation you can choose are equivalent because of this famous von Neumann theorem. But in the case of infinite dimensional case, this theorem is not valid anymore. You can have non-equivalent representations. And this is going to play quite an important role in the sense that you can have then, if you have a state, and then you define the set of all algebraic states which can be represented as density matrices in the GNS, the unique GNS representation of your of the state you've considered, and then this state is called a folium. Then, because of this, the possibility of these inequivalent representations, then you can have states, algebraic states, which cannot be represented by the GNS representations of other states, and these two set of states can be actually completely disjoint. And this is never the case in non-relativistic quantum mechanics. And in particular, it's going to play a big role in the sense that if you consider pure states, and then you can construct the volume of pure states, and then look for the volume of which is disjoint to the volume of pure states. So you are going to have states which cannot be represented by the GNS representation of pure states. But I'm not going to discuss this a bit later. Then there are further assumptions that people can make, but they're not so important for the rest, just for the sake of completeness. So people assume in general that there is a Poincaré vacuum state, which gives rise to this unique GNS representation with respect to the state. And then we discuss, and that's what I'm going to do for the rest, more concrete from Riemann algebras, in the sense that you take the representation of the algebra, and then you take the double commutant in order to have a closed algebra under a weaker topology, but that's not so important. The only thing is I'm only going to consider concrete from Riemann algebras in other words. And then there is this spectrum condition, just a condition about the positive of energy, and this weak additivity, and the other that we can have well posed initial value problem, Cauchy problem. If we have a Cauchy surface, then the algebra on this Cauchy surface determines the algebra on the whole extension of the development of the Cauchy surface. Now that's all about formalism, and you can ask about the physics. How can we do physics within this formalism? And the claim is that all the physics is encoded in this net of algebras, in this algebraic structure. So not directly into the states, but really in these algebras. And there is direct operationalistic sense, since these algebra encodes what one can measure in finite space-time regions. And experimental questions like, does a measure on some observable in some finite region yield a value within some interval correspond to algebraic operators in some direct sense. And scattering, for instance, matrix S matrix elements could be computed in principle from this formalism. But then, as I said at the beginning, strictly speaking, there is no AQFT model for interactive for any realistic interactive system. All one can do with this within this framework, strictly speaking, is only for free fields. So this raises the obvious question: why should we be interested in AQFT at all? And this has been discussed quite a lot in the literature on theosophy of physics, and there is, I think, a good argument in the sense that there are good reasons to be dissatisfied with standard textbook QFT, in the sense that if one considers that QFT again is defined, its definition, one defines QFT as the conjunction of quantum mechanics and special relativity, then it's an open question whether one can do that at all. But strictly speaking, then the QFT one can find in textbooks, like using renormalization, is not relativistic in this sense. Because you, for instance, in the standard cutter from a normalization procedure, then you're losing the Poincaré coordinates, and then you don't have a relativistic theory, strictly speaking. But then there is the, still one can compute things, and it's experimentally very successful, and one can still ask why should one be interested in APFT for foundational and conceptual issues. And the claim is that it's not either APFT or standard QFT, but just QFT. If one is interested to formal precise definitions, trying to draw conceptual conclusions, then AQFT just provides you with a very rigorous framework, and it's very clear. And in this sense, one can understand textbook QFT as just an effective theory, and the two theories or the two frameworks have just different aims. In the sense that AQFT would be some kind of ongoing program with a broader aim. And what I'm going to say about entanglement, strictly speaking, almost all I'm going to say is valid for effective QFT too. But AQFT just provides you with a precise framework. Now, about the definition of entanglement within AQFT, if one has two commuting Feynman algebra, which represents quantum field systems localized in space-like separated regions. Here, quantum field system means open space-time regions with AQFT properties defined, or QFT properties defined on them. Then one take the von Neumann algebra generated by these two algebras, and it's going to be the algebra of the composed system. And one can define then states on this composed algebra, and it's going to be states. It's going to be a state for the composed system. And then this state is a product state, just in case it's obvious that there are states on the sub algebras, such that the composed state is the product of the two states. And then it's entangled if it's not the limit of a convex combination of product states on the total algebra. And then people get a bit puzzled when they looked at this notion of cyclicity, and this we have this result that if one considers an open bounded space-time region, then the vacuum state is cyclic for the algebra defined for the sister algebra defined on this open region. And what does it mean? It means that the set of states generated by acting on by locally acting with local operators on the vacuum is dense on the Hilbert space. It means that the action of operators localized on this finite region allows one to approximate, in the sense of getting arbitrarily close to any state for space-like separated quantum field systems. It means that if you act here with an operator in this finite region, you can arbitrarily approximate any kind of state different from the vacuum in any space-like separated region. It seems to be very, very strange. And just puzzled, for instance, Hagen in his book, where he says that this theorem shows that the concept of localized states must be handled with care. And of course, the idea behind is that there is this is a hint for correlations and entanglement in the states. And it's not only valid for the vacuum, but for all bounded energy states. And this is the link with the thing which is puzzling behind cyclicity is, of course, entanglement. And there's this very clear proposition by Clifton and Hal Lawson, where you have, again, two quantum space-like separate quantum field systems. And if you have a cyclic state for one quantum field system, then the induced state, the induced global state over the two space-like separator systems is going to be entangled. And of course, if we apply this to the vacuum, we get without surprise that the vacuum is entangled across any space-like separator region. And there is a sense, there is a sense in which if you consider space-like separate bond open regions, the generic states are going to be entangled in this sense. And these results are directly a direct consequence of the EQFT assumptions. And but this is more interesting because the previous slide is nothing new in the sense that strictly speaking we have this in standard QFT2. It's nothing special as such. But here is the claim that for certain AQFT models, first of all, the generic state, the generic again A and B are space-like separate quantum field systems. The generic state, in a precise sense, the generic global state is going to maximally violate the value for it. This is observed by Severs and Werner in the 80s, I think. And there is even a sense in which, for instance, if one considers the Klein golden field on Minkowski spacetime and the AQFT model for that, then there is a precise sense in which you don't have product states across a region and it's space-like complement. And in this sense, you have intrinsic entanglement. And this is linked to what I said before about the volume. In these models, in these AQFT models, you have mixed algebraic states, which cannot be decomposed as mixtures of pure states, as probability distribution over projectors. And they are called intrinsically mixed states. And it's on this basis that these people claim that you have more entanglements in these models than in non-relativistic quantum mechanics. And there is a precise sense, if you reformulate quantum mechanics, non-relativistic quantum mechanics in the algebraic in algebraic terms, which you can do without any problem, then you will get a specific type of algebra, which is called factor type 1. Whereas in these models, in these relativistic models, you would get type 3 models where you have these intrinsically mixed states. And
Vincent,
yes.
Sorry, but it sounds like a bold. How do you? What is it? Can you write down an intrinsically mixed state, or is it something like they exist but you can never find them non-constructive?
You can write them down, but you cannot. You can write them down as algebraic states, as functional over an algebra of observables, but you cannot represent them as mixtures of pure states.
Well, I see that that's what it's saying. I mean, what does one look like? When you write it down on paper, what symbols do you write down to represent that?
You use the symbols that you use in order to represent a function over an algebra. And with this, strictly speaking, you can compute, calculate things because it gives you expectation values for the observables. The only thing is you cannot find a representation where you can represent this algebraic state in terms of mixture of pure states.
Yeah,
Would it be clear to say?
This is not representation, do you mean GNS representation?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the point, there's no GNS.
Yeah, of course, sorry, yeah. One more.
If you wouldn't, that's what you mean by right down.
Yeah.
I think right, right down, so for the transformation, you get a formal one, which is the burden is not unitary, and how you get all types of modes in infinite number of modes, and you write critical vectors in terms of communicating modes we state. So you can write from as it's unitary transformation, but it's formal one. This is why it's wild divergence.
Yeah, I know. I mean something specific by that. When I say I never like this stuff, what I mean is that it seems to me like all of this, you know, maybe special action.
Yeah, we can discuss the next after.
Okay. Yeah, let's just wash out and see.
It was the non-speculative part of my talk. I just want to point out that within this framework you can formulate Bell inequalities and the conditions for the Bell inequalities. In particular, you can formulate the Bell locality condition. And there is an interesting sense in which you can directly see that this is maybe very obvious, but if you take the AQFT assumptions, in particular the facts, AQFT assumptions, and you have that as a direct consequence that you get the parameter independence condition as a consequence of the assumption, and this is clear. It's just the fact that projectors of subalgebras just have the same sum to the same unity, so you can write this down and you have directly parameter independence. So in some sense, AQFT encodes parameter independence in a direct way. So violation of Bell inequalities would be directly linked to the violation of outcome independence within this framework. And now, just this is very speculative, but. There is a proposal to understand the outcome independence condition as a separability condition, and if you understand the Bell theorem as implying the violation of outcome independence, then it would mean from this interpersonal point of view that you have a violation of separability, that you have non-separability. And what does it mean? It means then that if you say that quantum systems could be quantum particles in non-relativistic quantum mechanics or quantum field systems here, that it means that according to the definition of separability that I gave at the beginning of the talk, that then the system do not possess intrinsic state-dependent properties determined by their distinct state, of course. And then state-dependent properties of a compound system are not determined by the intrinsic properties of the subsystems. So what it says is not that you cannot ascribe objective properties to the entangled subsystems, but that these properties cannot be intrinsic, and that the properties of a compound system, objective properties, again, I'm only speaking about objective properties here, are not determined by the objective properties of the subsystems. And then the correlate here is that you can only have relational properties, like being entangled with the quantum entanglement relation understood as a real physical correlation. That's one way to understand quantum entanglement. And then remember this quote I gave at the beginning. There was two kinds of worries by Einstein. The first one, the conceptual level, where he's according to the separability principle he wanted to hold on. Objects have to be something in themselves, possessing some intrinsic identity independently of other objects. But the reason why he said that space-like separated objects have to have their own state. People have raised objections in favor of Einstein against separability, and saying that it makes no sense. Separability makes no sense. Then you only have a big hole, and it's mad holism, and you cannot say anything. But in the metaphysics literature, there is a tool there, some kind of realism towards structures. And again, it's the idea that you have to reject intrinsic properties. Intrinsic here in the precise sense of properties being independent of there being other things. So you only have to consider relations, all kinds of relations, but you have to forget about intrinsic properties. And that's maybe what entanglement is trying to tell us. And that's a way to understand non-separability. So quantum objects, quantum systems, will not have intrinsic identity, but still we can still say something objective about them, but only in terms of relations. And that's a way to understand non-separability and the violation of outcome dependence. But that's again very speculative. And just to finish with it, there's this second level of worry. Remember in Einstein's quote, for instance, where he said that if you get rid of these principles, in particular the separability principle, then you cannot you cannot formulate and test physical laws. But there is a sense in which strictly separated quantum field system possess this famous split property, which ensures their operational good behavior. And strictly space-like separation means that if just small variations, they are still going to be space-like separated. So you just want to avoid tangent quantum field systems. And I'm not going to go into the details about the split property, but it's just equivalent to saying that the joint observable algebra is a algebraic tensor product, and of course, because in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, when you have several systems, what you do is you always take the tensor product, the Hilbert space, in order to build states. But here in the algebraic framework, you do not directly take tensor products. What you do is you take the union, or you consider the global algebra and the subsystems as subalgebras of a global algebra. So you don't have this tensor product structure in all cases. And Summers wrote quite a lot of paper on that and trying to argue that once you have this split property, which you have in many, many physically relevant cases, then you have very well-behaved systems, in the sense of operational independence and in the sense that you can locally prepare product states. And then for all practical purposes, in this sense, you can do physics, even if, strictly speaking, for instance, in the case of an open system, and you consider an open region of space-time, and it's a space-like complement, then for certain physical models of AQFT, then you don't even have product states. But once you allow for this split property, once you allow for considering strictly space-like separated systems, which you always do in practice, then you have all these nice features, and it makes sense why you can do physics. And just to finish, I just wanted to argue that AQFT provides a precise and conceptually clear framework to discuss these issues, and it's not in conflict with standard QFT. The fundamental assumptions of AQFT encode the localization and local action principles, in particular the parameter independence as a consequence. And attainment is generic in AQFT, and there is a precise sense again in which you have more entanglement in certain AQFT models than in non-relativistic quantum mechanics. And then this more speculative part about non-separability, but still operational independence. Thank you.
Vincent, you mentioned that no one's managed to apply interacting algebraic and quantum field theory.
Yeah.
It would seem at first sight that is in fact a reflection of this sort of radical non-separability in algebraic and quantum field theory. Is that correct? Is that a consequence?
No, I'm not sure, because again, you can perfectly understand violation of Bell inequalities in non-relativistic quantum mechanics in terms of violation of outcome independence. And again, you can interpret outcome independence as a separability condition in the sense I gave, in Einstein's sense, for instance. And then even in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, you would have non-separability in this sense. So the non-separability thing is not specific to the quantum field theoretic domain. It's just reinforced in the sense that there is a precise sense in which you might have more entanglement in the quantum field theoretic domain.
So then why is it so difficult to formulate these ranking quantum fields in this framework?
That's a very good question.
I think there have been ones constructed in 1 plus 1, I think recently it was
yeah,
2
yeah,
plus 1.
Yeah,
but it's
I really yeah, yeah. I meant it for that. And yeah, and if you speak to Fred Hahn, for instance, he is very optimistic in a few months, a few years, they're going to come.
The problem is that the last 20 years very much liking the algebraic field theory approach. I still have, just to say this, the optimism lasts for at least 20
yeah.
more years, because the books which were published in the mid-80s, it was expected that very soon we'll see the light. So far, it.
Yeah, but again, I just want to emphasize the fact that these interesting features and these conclusions are not linked to AQFT as such. AQFT should not be understood as a rigid, distinct, different theory. It's just a way to reformulate things. It's a tool, it's a box of tools to understand and precisely define. All I said about entanglement, for instance, is valid in QFT. The Rage-Lidov theorem is valid in QFT. But here, you have a framework where you can precisely define things and have you can try to interpret things because everything is very well defined. And it's still valid in QFT. This should be clear. So you shouldn't get out of the room and say this is all rubbish because we don't have any interactive model of AQFT. No, AQFT should be understood really as a toolbox. And an example is again Tony Downs and Gerald Newborn's work, for instance, where you can use these tools in order to do something. And my claim here is that you can use these tools in order to understand something more about entanglement.
I was just wondering how far you were thinking of pushing the idea that there's only a perhaps relational objectivity as a consequence.
Yes, very far.
All right, so
yeah,
is the Schmidt decomposition, for example, special, the basis in which you have a Schmidt decomposition?
Yeah.
That would be something you give a special interpretation to.
The Schmidt decomposition is a
Hilbert
space.
Yeah, more Hilbert space. We've got both a correlation between two bases for a given state. So
yeah.
Relationally, that seems objective.
But again, it doesn't change anything to my claim. Then you can have the Schmidt decomposition, but the claim here would say that it doesn't allow you to. You cannot interpret this as providing you intrinsic properties or representations of intrinsic properties, objective intrinsic properties of the entangled subsystems.
Uh-huh.
But still, you can describe objective relational properties like being entangled, for instance, or taking the entanglement relation with the Fermat-Ovingen relation, and then you can formalize the things. You can try to come with a two or three place predicates where you try to formalize the entanglement relation, and then you can use some kind of logic and try to define the identity of entangled object using Leibniz principle, for instance, where you allow relations to define the identity.
Mm-hmm.
Leibniz principle being the identity of the indisymbols, and this would give you a criterion for the identity of entangled subsystems. So you can say things objectively in some sense about entangled subsystems.
Do we have more questions? No, then I think we should thank our speaker now.